Good evening and welcome to Race Talks, everyone. I'm Kimberly Irwin, your host here. Every third Tuesday of the month is where we have the very necessary conversation on race and ethnicity. And this is also where we have no topic that is taboo. And I'm saying it this month myself instead of my guests because this show is taped. But trust me, it's still a full show that's both fun and informative. So what's in store? We've got talk terms, right acts, do you know, and a rich roundtable. So let's get started with talk terms. Talk term today is Ebonics. What is it? It's known as African American Vernacular English, and it was a term coined by psychologist Robert Williams in 1973. And I bring this up because Texas State Representative Jolanda Jones uses this when she is in a press conference alongside our very own New York Governor Kathy Hochul and other lawmakers who left Texas to block congressional redistricting. And it's not just any kind. She calls it out as she sees it and as I see it, which is why it's here, as racist gerrymandering. And yes, she lets Ebonics be her guide. Go on, Jolanda.
Always, I sat in on the hearings. It was a joke. The chair of the redistricting committee, Cody Bassoot, is a lawyer. In the legislature, he is the expert on points of order. He knows the law. Cody pays attention to detail. During the redistricting committee meetings, well, I haven't looked at anything. I don't know. I ain't seen no maps. Yeah, whatever you say. So you peeing on me and you telling me it's raining and you expect me to believe it. Wrong answer. The districts that are targeted overwhelmingly are black districts. Okay, they are pitting Jasmine Crockett against Mark Vesey, and they are pitting Al Green against CD18, where there's a black representative. If you don't know who sat in CD18, I live in CD18, by the way. Barbara Jordan, Mickey Leland, Craig Washington, Sheila Jackson Lee, and Sylvester Turner. So those are the people they're trying to take out. So I'm real upset about it, and my constituents are real upset about it. My constituents demanded that I be here. So you think I'm gonna listen to Donald Trump and Greg Abbott and Dan Patrick and the Attorney General? But my point is this: we, the Democratic contingent, we are paying attention to what our constituents are demanding of us. They literally told us, if you don't cornbread, we will primary you. That's how important it is. This is, people wonder, why should New York be concerned about what's going on in Texas? Why should anywhere be concerned with going on in Texas? I'm gonna tell you why. My grandmother says this: if you allow yourself to be a rug, people will step on you. No one was paying attention to North Carolina in 2024. There were 7 Republican congresspeople. There were 7 Democratic congresspeople. Guess what? The Republicans rigged the game in North Carolina, and they took 3 seats. I'm going to say this one more again. That's Ebonics for those of y'all who don't speak it. They took 3 seats. Congress has a 3 Republican majority. Ding, 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 ding. So we weren't paying attention to what was going on in North Carolina. And look what we have. We got that big, ugly, terrible bill shoved down our throats. So guess what? I was paying attention. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Texas will not be North Carolina. We will not give them what we need. And we're marching. We ain't fleeing. We're fighting. And we are so incredibly thankful that the governor has hosted us, because we need allies.
Now, on to our Right Act segment, spotlighting actions and bridging cultures and communities. What's the Right Act for this month? Attend events outside your own cultural circle. Well, actually do that for September, because Gary Dempsey of Hudson, New York, is representing the Hudson Family Reunion Committee to talk about their 3rd annual Hudson Family Reunion, which is coming up in September, a 3-day affair you don't want to miss. So Gary, let's take it away. Share a little bit about who you are and what events coming up that folks need to be talking about.
Well, hello, Kimberly. And first of all, thank you for allowing me to come on your show to represent the Hudson Family Reunion. It is truly an honor to represent the committee. I used to be a barber for many, many years. I got a chance to meet a lot of the community and, have a lot of diverse conversations with so many people. And I'm here to talk about the family reunion that we're going to be having in September. All are welcome. You don't have to be from Hudson to come down and partake in what we do. The reason why it even came about is that we had a friend who passed away. And because of that, there were so many people that came to his services. And I think a lot of people acknowledge that this is the only time, or one of the times, when so many people come and gather to say their goodbyes. But what we wanted was to have people come and say hello with that same kind of energy, but not have it a sad time. And that's how this was formulated, and we just kind of took it and ran with it. It was first a whimsical thought, and we just challenged each other, and next thing you know, it just started to have momentum, and then it became reality. So here we are in our third year.
Right. So let's back up and make it very clear for those who might want to attend. It's actually an event that's coming up, right? It's coming up next month in September. And you mentioned a group of guys or a group of people who came up with the idea to have this event since, you know, family usually come together for more somber occasions like funerals or going home celebrations, where this would be a stay put celebration in a sense. So if you can just share with the listeners right now where the location is, when it's going to be, and you know, yeah, the members of this committee that came up with this idea.
It's going to be at the waterfront in Hudson. Well, when I say that, that's the second day. The first day is going to be at a meet and greet at the Return Brewery. And that's just pretty much what it says. You're just going to come up there and, you know, share a few laughs, some beers and wine, whatever it is that you partake in, and just get a chance to relax a little bit before the main day, which is going to be that Saturday. That's going to be on the 5th of September.
Okay, so let me make sure I get this. There's two events, two event
Three.
days. Three.
Three.
Okay, well, let's go back
Yeah.
to the first one
Yeah.
because you mentioned brewery and there's so many in Hudson. I want to make sure I go to the right one.
This one is called the Return Brewery. Okay. So that's just to get acquainted, just kind of relax on your day.
And that's like at
Before
7 p.m., 5 p.m. When does that start?
that's at from 5 to 10.
Okay.
Okay. And then the next day is going to be what we would deem the main event, because we have all kind of stuff going on.
It's Saturday,
Saturday the
September,
6th, September 6th.
and it starts at the Front Street. What is it called? The
The waterfront.
Waterfront Park.
Yes.
And
Yep.
at what time?
It starts at 12.
Okay, so people have a good opportunity to, you know, get that hangover away from the brewery. Right.
Yep. You got a lot of time for that. So you can just rest up and be ready for the next day.
Awesome.
That lineup will be, we'll be introducing the mayor, and he'll introduce the senator, well, Mayor Kamal Johnson, that is. And then he'll introduce the senator, Michelle Henchy. We have a guest speaker this year who will be Michael Howard. And we have some awards for some of the people who have had some pretty big impact in our community. And we'll go through that, as well as we'll go into the entertainment. We'll have the Bindle Stiff Circus with Stephanie Monsoon. And we have some bands, the Hotshot Hillbillies. Then we have this smooth R&B group that's gonna just, you know, take the night away. We have stuff for the kids, such as face painting. All kind of vendors will be there.
So you can get your grub on, you can bring
You
your
can get your grub on.
family, you know, get a
Absolutely.
blanket, put chairs up, you know,
That's
maybe
right.
it's going to be a really lovely day, so you want the umbrella, right? So you could be under the umbrella. And
Oh yeah.
so I'm very excited to be asked into, you know, join in doing it again. And this time I'm going to be inviting some of the other WGXC 90.7 FM Wave Farm Enterprise.org, enterprise programmers and hosts from shows to come by and sit and also commingle with the attendees as they come in, because, you know, we all have something to say. So we want to share why, you know, it's great to be part of this community, even if we're not currently residing there, but that we keep coming back, right? So it has to be something good about that. Now, one of the things that you didn't share, and we don't have too much time, but I do want to give shout outs to those people who are making this happen. You mentioned some of the entertainers and people, vendors who would be present. Can you also share, I mean, if you want, some of the names of those that made this a success this year and who may have even started with the group maybe no longer be a part of it, but their ideas are coming to fruition.
Okay, so I'll take you back to where it first started. It was Tony Davis and Jeff Small, who is now not with us. He moved. But they were talking, and they said what is commonly said, like, wow, I wish we could do something like this on a happy note. And then that's when Tyrone Hedgepeth happened to roll up on them, and they talked about it. And Tyrone said, well, you know, let's go ahead and see what we could do and make it happen. But they all took the challenge. And then Tyrone told me about it, and I said, well, let's do it. Let's just do it. And from there, I brought in Michael Bryant. They brought in Venice Forbes, who's no longer part of the group, but she was one of the founding members. And then it just started to explode with William Hughes, Alexis Keith, Dan Graninetti, Mishonda Franklin, who is our chief of police, and Pat Malloy. Pat was our guest speaker last year, and I guess he saw something he liked about it, and you know, we kind of liked him to be part of it, and it was just a natural vibe for him to be in it. And those are the people.
Well, it's great when the community of like-minded people come together and challenging yourselves with an idea such as this to bring people together. What an awesome undertaking. And I know it's not easy, but being that it's not easy breezy peasy, right? But that it's worth it, right? That you continue to do it. And, you know, this is like the third annual, like you mentioned. I'm sure 10 years from now, you'll pass the baton or the wand or whatever it is that you might be passing to the next generation to keep it flowing, right?
Well, we are definitely looking for younger talent out here, because age waits for no one. And, you know, some of us is climbing that ladder.
Oh, you're all so young. Okay, so what we have here is a Friday event at the brewery. Look it up. It's on State Street. We have a Saturday full exposure where you're going to be at the park enjoying yourself with your family, friends, colleagues, coworkers, everybody. And then anything else Saturday night? Is there anything going on then after what?
Yes.
Saturday just tell night, us what's happening. Yes.
Saturday night, we're going to be at the Return Brewery again. We're going to return to the Return Brewery for a second night. We're going to have another R&B band, really, really good. They sound so much like the real performers. That's going to be from 8 to 11 at the Return Brewery. So after that, we're going to have singing. Some going to have bands and some going to be choirs.
And when is it, Sunday?
That's going to be Sunday the 7th.
Okay, so we're going to have like gospel music?
Yes.
Okay. So, and does any of this cost money? Is it all free?
The one thing that you would pay for is if you get food from the vendors. Other than that, everything is free.
So there are no attendance fees?
No.
Okay.
Absolutely not.
All right. Well, I think this is it. We don't have any time, so I'm just going to say thank you so much, Mr. Gary Dempsey, my former barber friend. Yeah, I remember talking to you, and I'm sitting at the chair too. Keep it going, and much kudos and great things in the future to you and your compadres.
Well, thank you so much, Kim. I definitely appreciate the opportunity to talk to the community, to yourself, about this beautiful event that we are planning to have in September.
Okay, so the right act is to attend your community extravaganzas, because the hard work and dedication that's put into this really shows up to help you show out when you attend. Peace
Thank
out.
You.
The Did You Know segment is all to do with Chef Moise Ortiz, who owns two Mexican restaurants here in Columbia County. They are La Mission in Hudson and La Pico de Gallo in Stuyvesant. Chef Moise Ortiz survived 9/11 because, as a chef at Windows on the World at the World Trade Center, on that day he simply didn't go in. And that means he's here for us. Joining the roundtable, Garrett Roche is the podcaster of the Roche Solid Truth. He's the one whose materials I've taken to present here for the roundtable that he, John Parker, Barbara Green, and Victoria Signorelli, along with Chef Ortiz. Take it away, John Parker.
Well, I'm very happy to say hello to everybody. And I'm very, very pleased and very honored to be on your program, Kimberly. God bless you. I would like to say before I begin that, of course, history as is presented to us by historians and textbook companies is not always the way things were. And so I think what we're doing today is really pulling back some of the peels of the onion to find out what is the true story of the Romanovs, and in particular, Anastasia, Grand Duchess Anastasia Romanov, and why in the world would we be told one thing when really it seems to me after 20 years of research that something quite different was happening, and that she was in America from the 1920s until she died in 1997. So I want to thank you for allowing us to talk about these things, about how truth can be hidden for a long time, but it does seem to come out. It's almost like a waterfall. Eventually the water comes up so high it must flow over. And I think we're flowing over right now on your program. So thank you very much.
You're
the
welcome.
17th of July would have been the 107th anniversary of the alleged murder of the Romanovs. And a number of us did go to the monastery in central New York, in Herkimer County, in the village of Jordanville, a Russian Orthodox monastery, where the lady in question, known with the pseudonym Evgenia Smetisko, is buried. And we went there to commemorate the particular day when maybe she was murdered, or maybe, quite probably, most probably, she escaped and did not die. And Victoria Signorelli, who's on with us today, has been part of this project for a very long time, helping me to do research. And so I want to thank her from the bottom of my heart. Barbara Green, who is here with me in Catskill, New York, a well-known artist of Judaica, of boxing motifs, well-known for Mike Tyson, for doing Mike Tyson in the custom model gym. She's in the Boxing Hall of Fame. She's also in Hebrew Union College. So instrumental in helping to recreate the face of about a 40-year-old Anastasia in court costume, which no one would ever have seen because, of course, the monarchy ended in 1918 or 1917, to be even more precise. And so Barbara recreated this magnificent full-size portrait of Anastasia, and using 2D, 3D visual face recognition technology, came up with the face of Evgenia Smetisko on top of the face of the young Anastasia Romanov. And of course, the spoiler alert, those faces in 2D and 3D recognition analyses were exactly the same face. So Barb has really recreated a piece of history, lost history, which will be referred to centuries from now. I'm very, very sure of that. Moises Ortiz is also with us today. He runs and owns La Mission restaurant in Hudson, New York. He's a survivor of 9-1-1. He was the chef at Windows on the World and luckily did not go to work that day and is alive to be with us all. And Kimberly, you may not know this, and I may have mentioned it to you, that very strangely, in a very mystical way, a very beautiful way, everybody who has helped on this project, when we've done the DNA test, we've all turned out to be related to one another. And so really, I'm not only here with my friends, and this includes Garrett Roche, but also with my DNA relatives. And so there's a mystical element to all of this research. It must be we're getting older, because I talk to younger people and about Anastasia and the Romanovs, and many draw blank stares. Oh, I don't remember that. Whereas I think, and we're not that old, but I think in our generation, it was still fresh enough that it was more of an understood piece of history. So this, I'm glad, Kimberly, that you are doing this on your program too, because what we're doing is giving that information about history to a new, younger generation who may not have heard about it. So I think we're doing some good teaching with this program.
Oh, no. I want to thank you for being a part of this project. I mean, this has been part of my life for a very long time. My mother introduced me to the Imperial family. So this had been part of life since childhood. And this was in the 1960s, 1970s, when the information was still coming out, where they were still having this mystery of, did she survive or didn't she survive? And my mother and I always had this conversation, saying, what if she did survive? You know, so it's always been, it's actually been part of me. So this is another step in that direction. And I want to thank everybody for letting me be a part of it.
I have a question. Right. First, I want to thank you, Garrett, for letting me, Kimberly Irwin, because of your podcast today. And, you know, John is a really great friend and fan of Race Talks. And so definitely looking forward to adding a lot of this information on the show. I do have a few questions. And actually, John, you kind of already said some reasons why it's kind of interesting that there are people on the planet today who may not have very much knowledge about this period of time. So I don't think it was very clear. So I kind of want to make sure the listeners are following the understanding of the history. So we are, this period of time is in Russia. They have the kings and queens right still during this time. And when the alleged murder takes place, it's the last of the czars, right? The Russian czars. And so yes, that's why it's a big deal. And I think, you know, as a teacher in New York or New York State teacher in high school, unless you're taking a European class in history, you might not get a lot of this feed, this information. So I have one question actually for Vicky. You said your mom introduced you to the Imperial family. Can you share a little bit about how that came across? Because I think that's really interesting and can inform the listener on how one might introduce the family if they find this really as interesting as we all do. Though I don't think there's any DNA relations that I might have with you, I still feel it's quite interesting. So Vicky, if you're still there, could you share a little bit about how your mom introduced you to this Imperial family?
Thank you for that question, Kimberly. I remember when I was very young, my mom used to watch all of these documentaries, and they were talking about the Imperial family, the Romanovs, and she had a love for Queen Victoria, and though that was their grandmother, I was named after Queen Victoria. Because my mother idolized her. She was a short queen, but she ruled a kingdom. Right. So her grandchildren were Empress Alexandra and the Tsar Nicholas. And then her grandchildren were, you know, her great-grandchildren were Anastasia and the rest of the girls and Alexei. So my mom was very much into this. very much into Anglo information. You know, she loved the English, and she had got me into it. She would watch all of these documentaries and all these little news snippets and everything, and I got into it because she was so into it, and it was one of those sharing moments between us. And I was very young, so it was a very mind-opening thing for me.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, I mean, I think history can totally be a way to bond with, you know, your family. And certainly, if you have grandparents and other interested parties, you know, it's a great way of connecting.
Oh, you're welcome.
Kimberly, may I interject there? We have a living connection to those times with Barbara Green, who's with us today, because Barbara Green's father came out of the Russian Revolution, out of revolutionary Russia, one of the reasons why they had to leave Russia. And she'll tell us a bit about that right now. But they took a route that many expatriate Russians took, going through Harbin, China, where there was a large Russian contingent of expatriates and had been there for even before the revolution. And I'm wondering, Kimberly, if we might ask Barbara to give us a bit of insight about the revolution from her family's perspective.
Yeah, I'd be interested.
Hi, everybody. Well, my father was born in 1910 in Kiev, and the revolution breaks out. My grandfather was in America working, sending money so that he could bring them over. One day, knock, knock at the door. They were accused of being bourgeoisie because it was the term used because he had his own business. Ergo, he was a despised capitalist. Anyway, they were sent to Siberia. And my grandmother, who had four little children, had the wherewithal. I don't know how she did it, but she managed to get them out of there into Harbin, from there to Japan. Anyway, it took 2 years of an exodus getting from Russia to the United States. So that's a little bit of my family history. And thank you for asking.
And Barbara, may we tell the listening public that one of your relatives seemed to have been enamored of Bolshevism. What happened with your uncle?
My father's oldest brother, my uncle Max, was quite enamored with communism. And in 1931, he went back. My father did not go. He was older and was not interested in it. Anyway, it took my father 3 years to get them back to the States, lots of bribes and all that stuff. And so that's another little piece of the history.
So you see, even though we think of that times, the Tsarist times, as being old and very past history, the reverberations of those times are with us, and they're right in Barbara's own family history. So quite alive in her oral tradition.
Yeah, and it's very interesting, John, that I'm so glad you mentioned that and had Barbara speak more about her family connections and how they traveled through two nations, right? Through China and Japan to get to the United States. When we think in the United States about coming to America, we really are usually focused on the Western European exports and not really the Eastern European, which Russia is part of. So I really think that's very interesting and unique to have come through two Asian nations before rebounding here in America.
Moises is one of our DNA relatives of Garrett, of Vicky, of Barbara, but he is from Mexico. So we've always been wondering how could that have happened, but he lives very close to the city of Puebla, and maybe he can tell us in Spanish, and I'll translate for him, the connection to Puebla.
Hey, hello, everybody.
My hello. Name is...
Hello.
Hola.
Hola. Mi nombre es Moises. My name is Moises, and I want to say I live in Puebla. I live in Puebla. I'm from Puebla. And para mí es muy importante estar aquí acerca de todo esto que está hablando John.
It's very important to me, all of these things that John is talking about in his research.
Ha sido una gran experiencia.
And a very a big experience for me.
Cuando yo vine de México, no vine con maletas ni nada.
When I came from Mexico, I had no suitcases or anything like that.
Solo con mis sueños.
Only my dreams.
Y aquí en Estados Unidos he crecido.
And in America, I have grown.
Espiritualmente, emocionalmente y económicamente.
Spiritually, economically, emotionally, I've grown.
Y conocer a John ha sido muy importante porque he conocido lo que está pasando con sus libros, y he tenido, estamos en el año 2025, el tiempo de revelación de lo oculto y de lo que se tiene que ser revelado.
So when I met John, it was very important to me to understand what was happening with his books, the things that he was researching. And now we're here in 2025, and this is an era or a time period of revelation and of ¿qué más?
Revelaciones y verdades ocultas.
And hidden truths which are emerging for people to finally see.
Que tienen que salir a la luz.
Which have to come out to the light.
La experiencia con la princesa es que he tenido sueños, he visto, hay personas que somos sensibles a las visiones y sueños.
So the event or the matter of the princess, he goes, I'm a very sensitive person, I have had dreams where I have actually dreamt,
you creo de Anastasia, ¿verdad? De Anastasia.
Where I have dreamt of Anastasia.
O cosas como, por ejemplo, he acompañado a John al cementerio y cosas que yo vi en mi sueño y pasaron y cosas que van a pasar.
And I have accompanied John to the cemetery where Anastasia Evgeny is buried. And I have seen things that I had dreamt about already beforehand, and things which are going to happen in the future.
Y estoy muy contento con John por ser parte de este equipo de descubrir sobre Anastasia.
And I'm very pleased to be part of this whole team that's dealing with Anastasia. And one thing I'd like to add that Moy has told me many, many times, because we are related. We're related through my mother and through Barbara's mother, Garrett through your mother, and it looks like Vicky through you mother, your mother. So we have these maternal connections that Puebla had a very large European contingent that was living there at the time of the European monarchy, when there was a Habsburg on the throne. Of course, it didn't end well for the Habsburg. He was murdered, of course, but the Habsburgs are related also to the Romanovs through many of the same German families. And so this is something that genetically we are researching, and I hope to go to Puebla and visit Moy's village one day and go to the church and see if we can go back some generations and find what our common connection is. But it looks like Puebla has a place that would connect the royal courts of Russia and Austria-Hungary with very close to where he was living in Mexico.
Wow, that is quite a connection. I'm just kind of interested, yeah. When you took the DNA test, do you recall what company that was?
Okay, I'm actually a number of different companies, Kimberly, and some that everybody will recognize, like 23andMe, MyHeritage, Ancestry.com. But in all of these particular tests, no matter which one you take, you download the raw data and then upload that raw data into a free app called GEDmatch.com. And when you do that, now you're able to triangulate and compare and contrast with people who have taken tests from all different kinds of companies. And that's where we were able to take our kit numbers, our uploaded genetic information, contrast and compare, and found that we were not really that distantly related. And about the furthest I can think of any of us is we're fourth cousins, and then some even closer than that. So we're talking about, rather closely related.
Hey, Garrett, what's your European Anglo relation? Because we have Russian, German, Mexican, and Garrett, yours is?
Thank you for asking, Kimberly. I had loads handed down about my family, especially from my mom's side. We're from Alsace-Lorraine on the French-German border. That part of the family came through Germany as a processing center. And then my dad's family had people from the Swiss-German border and also Yorkshire English coal miners.
And Kimberly, may I interject here? Now that we're talking about DNA, that's why I love this program, because it's organically developing. It's a lot of fun. Many people who do know about the Romanovs, and then they hear that one or the other may have survived, many times they very quickly and very adamantly denounce any kind of talk about survival. And they say, well, the DNA proves that they were all dead. And then I have to challenge them. I said, well, where did the DNA come from? Well, they found the bones. Well, for DNA evidence to be allowed in a court as evidence, one would have to show that it was handled with scientific protocols, because it could be planted evidence. So the DNA aspect is very interesting.
How does one come back from the, you know, the murders of her entire family like that?
Well, this is another thing, Kimberly, and I cannot take any credit for this aspect that I'm going to mention to you. Another researcher very soon will come out with her allegation that nobody was killed. But there is some allegation that there was a state secret and they were all allowed to live by playing dead. I cannot say that I believe it or that I know anything about it. I'm just telling you that there is that new hypothesis out there. As far as Our Lady Anastasia, she comes only a few years after the revolution, after the supposed murder, on a steamship, and she comes to America under the name of Mrs. Evgenia Smetisko. With no Mr. Smetisko on the boat with her. Mr. Smetisko is living in Yugoslavia, purportedly. And so she comes by herself, purportedly a milliner. But she is received very quickly after getting off the boat by the Kolzat sisters, whose relatives, whose father and grandfather were very high up in the judiciary, were friends of presidents and people of high economic social status, which makes one think that her arrival in the United States may have been planned at some high level of our government to protect her identity, but that she wasn't going to get off the boat as a poor Eastern European immigrant and go live in a tenement building. She got off the boat and ends up living in Chicago with people of very well-to-do people, ends up her life living in even more posh surroundings in Newport, Rhode Island. And according to the Newport, Rhode Island reports of non-for-profit entities, her non-for-profit, which was called St. Nicholas House Foundation, had assets of over $54 million.
Wow, so, that's a lot back then.
It's more than I have in my bank account. But let me tell you, if she got off the boat and then ends up her life administering that kind of money, one has to ask, where did the money come from? Well, as of 1963, she started to say, well, I'm Anastasia. And why did she start saying she was Anastasia in 1963? Well, because she was put into a CIA still used protocol polygraph lie detector test with Grover Cleve Baxter, whose protocols are still used by the CIA. And after 15 hours, he said, lady, you're deceiving me. You're not telling me the truth. You're telling me that you're a friend of Anastasia Romanov, but it's coming up as deception. So we're going to do another 15 hours as Anastasia. I want you to answer these things as though you are Anastasia and see what happens. After another 15 hours, 30 hours in total, he looks at her and he said, you're telling the truth. And he reports, yes, she is obviously who she says she is. She is Grand Duchess Anastasia Nikolaevna Romanov.
And what would be her age coming to the States and being with the family in Chicago?
Beautiful question. She's probably very early 20s, 22 perhaps. I'd have to look at the records, the immigration records when she got off the boat.
So in 1950, she would be like 50 years of age.
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
Well, in 1963, when she's being written about in Life magazine, she would have been 62 years
right.
old.
Yeah. Wow.
And just to draw Barbara back into the conversation here, we used visual face recognition techniques that were given to us by Mr. Bob Schmidt. He's a visual face recognition analyst, founder, really, of an inventor. And we used the face of the 62-year-old Evgenia, who appeared in Life magazine, with photos, verified photos of Grand Duchess Anastasia, and they all turned out to be, to use ironically the expression, dead ringers for one another. In fact, Bob Schmidt did the 2D, and he said, John, obviously it's the same woman, but I'm going to have 3D technology very soon. Hold on for a year, and I'm going to come back and give you a 3D analysis. And he did that 3D analysis. And he said, look, it's obviously the same woman. He goes, this is the best one I've done in 30 years of my career. And he had a very illustrious career. He found the earliest known photo of Abraham Lincoln. He was able to verify it. He worked on the Jesse James case. He was also able to identify an early photo of Richard Wagner, I guess we say in English. I don't know how to really say it in English. Richard Wagner. That was somebody had in Germany, and he was able to use his technology to verify that. And he said, it's obviously the same woman. And Barbara used those analyses to create the beautiful face in the portrait, which is on the front cover of the book. And can I ask Barbara just to step in here for a second? Because she was initially incredulous. She didn't really believe that Anastasia had survived. And so she changed as we researched. I'm going to ask her to talk about that very quickly. Barbara?
This is true. Being a Scorpio, I am always skeptical. But I just couldn't believe that anybody could have survived that onslaught. But after studying the facial recognition
analyses
that John showed me, it was a fascinating problem or puzzle to reconstruct how she would have looked as a woman in her late 30s, early 40s. So I'm thinking maybe it seemed possible, more than possible, that she made it out of there. It's been known to happen where people play dead, and especially during the Holocaust, they would find heaps of bodies and somebody who survived underneath some of them. So I have to say that I definitely am a convert now, in spite of my skepticism.
I was just thinking, I guess I saw a movie where the family was shot. It was like a reenactment kind of thing. Yeah. Or a movie that depicted that. And I'm thinking that she was like 11 or 12. Who would have been younger than her in the family?
Alexei would have been younger. And I think that would be probably a case of artistic license to make it seem more, to make
sad.
The massacre look more horrific than right. it would have been. But she would have been 17 years old, or you know, close to 17 years old when it happened.
Okay.
And if I might add, also on Garrett's program, we had interviewed Mr. What's his name?
Bob Schmidt.
Bob Schmidt, thank you. And I had asked him point blank, I said, is there any way that you could do anything, manipulate the software where you can make it fit? And he told me, no, I cannot do it. There's too many points of reference. I cannot make what I want to make. I have to go with what the program tells me.
Yes, he did say that, Vicky. Thank you for bringing that back to my memory as well. And just to inform all the listeners, that was actually this is going, you know, I can't believe how the years passed. That's when we had Mr. Schmidt call in. And unfortunately, Bob Schmidt has since passed away.
Yes.
So thank you so much for all that too, Vicky.
Yes, Vicky, that's a great piece of information for the listeners to hear, that it was Anastasia that had really been the gem of his career.
Well, that's very interesting. I wish Bob was alive because, you know, people have made statements about what cultural relations certain people are. And it comes up that Abraham Lincoln may not have been simply Anglo, that he had a little bit of swarthiness. When you talk about swarthy from that time period, you're looking at North African genes. So,
yeah. Oh, certainly. I've heard that, Kimberly.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Indeed.
Well, John knows my ethnicity. I thought I was half Sicilian, half Neapolitan, but it works out that I'm a lot more than that.
Wow.
Yes, and
sure.
I have Spanish from Spain, Portuguese. I have, a lot of Jewish on both sides. So it's that's my... I'm like a
57
person.
Also, and Lebanese Muslim also in your genome.
Yes.
You know, so, and Sicily was very. Sicily was like a United Nations. You know, Sicily was really a melting pot of many, many different cultures, religions, ethnicities, races. You name it. They were
one race, the human race. I'm just gonna throw that in.
Right back to your program. Yes, Sicily is
there.
It.
We go.
Yeah, and some blonde-haired Vikings too were in the mix. I'd like to share something with you that goes along with what we're speaking about right now, and it's with Moises, and of course Moises is part of the Anastasia team here. And before he did his DNA test, I had a dream where I was in his house, looking into La Paz, Bolivia, where the further down the mountain you live, that's where the wealthier people live. And the higher up on the mountain, the less wealthy people live because there's less oxygen. There's more oxygen the further down you go. And it was lit up with a silver light. Well, don't you know, when he's from Mexico, and when he took the DNA test, he had La Paz, Bolivia, was in his genome.
There you go.
We are, as you say, we think we're presenting one way in our phenotype, but our genotype is much more complex and labyrinthine than our phenotype, the way we look, would suggest.
So it's very interesting that you might look like a person in your family, but your genes are, you can have closer genes to a friend as opposed to a relative.
Yes,
certainly.
Absolutely.
I'm well aware of that too.
Hmm? Yeah. Well, that goes with my family. My brother takes after my mother's side of the family, and I take after my father's side of the family. Now, my mother was Neapolitan, and she looked more like, she was very blonde, blue-eyed, pale face. My father was dark. So, you know, we both have two different things there. We're both siblings. We came from the same mother and father, but we look completely different.
What, you mentioned Neapolitan, and I'm going to be ignorant here. What is exactly that ethnic makeup? What are you talking about when you say Neapolitan?
Oh, it's from Naples. It's close to Pompeii. It's close to Mount Vesuvius. It's in that little area. They call it Southern Italian, you know, Southern. But it's mixed up with everything else, too, because the English took it over. The Normans took it over. So pretty much it's a melting pot also.
Right.
Certainly.
You see, we're uncovering what we're doing here is we're taking what has been presented to us and presented to us as fact, and we're using our analytical skills, our critical thinking, and we're discovering that reality is much deeper, and there's another story that's more valid than the one that we have been spoon-fed. And that makes me wonder about many, many things that we have learned in school or that we are presented to in news and by so-called mavens, so-called historians and experts may not be exactly very experty, to coin that phrase.
And they aren't, because, you know,
absolutely.
Back in the day, they didn't have the tools. They didn't have the scientific ability to even understand plants, so let alone understand humans. And they discounted the fact that you could take plants and create new plants from that. And so clearly, they didn't think that humans would be able to, you know, be mixed and mingled like that. They didn't really have a good understanding. And those who spoke the loudest were, in a sense, the most racist, though that term wasn't used back in the day. You know, you could be from different nations. It didn't matter what you looked like. It really mattered what your last name was. It's just, I think we need to, you, John, because you're a writer, I'm a writer, people like us, we need to reevaluate and reissue what is now the new norm, especially because we are physically being shown that we are all one family, right?
I mean, we are. Yes.
There were 10,000 people on the planet in sometime before Christ, and now we're at 8 billion. So, where did all these people come from? The 10,000. We are one family. Stop it already. You know, that's all I can say.
Well, it's,
hey,
it's
amen. Awesome. Well, thank you for that.
Beautiful.
What also I love about this is that we're all from different denominations. We're all related by DNA, but we all have different religions.
Maybe this whole Anastasia research and revelation is really has a more metacognitive goal. Go deeper. Expand your horizons. Dare to not accept what's being given to you as the, you know, gospel truth, you know, things on a silver platter. Look for yourself and be prepared to be absolutely amazed at what you're going to find, you know, a reality, a history that the history books, you know, are sometimes so dull and kids don't want to learn it. But if they start to critically analyze and dig deeper, they'll be historians for the rest of their lives, because it's so exciting they won't be able to stop. Yes.
I never liked social studies. I hated it throughout school. And here I am, fascinated by it.
Isn't that incredible? Way to go, Victoria.
And you know what? I would caution the listener who, you know, just found this podcast, or if they're listening on the radio, on Race Talks, and they're just saying, why would I care about someone who in another land and another continent at a different time period that has no relation or any idea of what I'm going through? That's how you need to look at history. So everyone's viewpoint and journey is valid.
Amen.
Amen.
Lovely. Well, amen, for sure.
It's been an absolutely wonderful experience to be with you all. Kimberly, thank you so much for allowing us to be on your program, and Garrett for organizing and pulling it all together. I hope people will enjoy it, learn from it, be challenged by it, and I hope it takes them to a higher place of understanding. No matter what conclusion they come to, they can come to the conclusion that they want to, but you know, think for yourself and expand your horizons. And you guys have to be thanked for allowing us to do that. So my thanks to you both, and to our guests.
A pleasure and honor and a joy, everyone. Honestly, I think we need a to be continued of this with all parties involved.
Kimberly, get your DNA done, and John will come up with some incredible things for you to know.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, well, then we'll all come back on for that.
Okay, God bless, and thanks to all your listeners who've been listening intently to what we've been saying. That's an honor, too. Thank you so much.
Right. Keep on keeping on. Thank you so much. Muchas gracias. And spasibo, boshoy, and all of the above.
Love you and joy.
Once again, the roundtable. Guest talkers this month were John Froebel Parker, author of Anastasia Again, The Hidden Secret of the Romanovs, which can be found on www.kimberlyirwin.me. website. Also, you'll find more information on Barbara Green, Moises Ortiz, Victoria Signorelli, and Garrett Roche, podcaster of The Roche Solid Truth. And that's our show for August 2025. Thank you for joining in. I'm your host, Kimberly Irwin, inviting you to join me in Hudson on September 6th at the WGXC 90.7 FM Race Talks booth. We will be interviewing and talking with attendees. Hopefully one will be you. Stop by. And until then, be the best you. Love, beauty, joy.